Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 8 of the UI Breakfast podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our co-host is still the same amazing Kai Davis, the outreach consultant who's teaching anybody on earth reach out to celebrity and, you know, spread the word about yourself. And today the topic for our episode is writing the perfect email. And we're going to walk through all the parts of that email, because writing anything can be hard. It can be hard to write a subject line, it can be hard to write an intro, and we're just gonna do all that with Kai today. Hey, Kai.
Hey, excited to be here and teach people how to write emails that rock.
I'm sure you will, so let's get started. First, maybe we should define the structure of a perfect email and then walk through all the components.
Perfect, I like it. So in my mind, at least, the structure of an email, you have to think about the subject line, you have to think about the introduction, you have to think about that core message you have for the person reading it, you have to think about the call to action, that next step you want them to take, and then you have to think about any PS or postscripts you want to include in the email, whether they're valuable, what purpose they serve, and what you want to share there.
But before anything, you need to think of an address, really.
Before anything, you need to think about who you're actually emailing and what their email address is, what their name is, and how you pull all of that information together.
I'm quite sure it should start with an audience first.
Mm-hmm.
Because anything in this world starts with an audience.
It's basically my middle name at this point. Start with the audience first. And you're absolutely right. Like, when it comes to cold outreach of any sort, whether you're pitching a podcast that you want to come on, whether you're reaching out to a site that you want to contribute a guest article to, whether you're emailing somebody you want to build a relationship with, or whether you're sending a cold email to a business you want to work with, you start by figuring out who that audience is you want to reach. Because knowing that audience helps you define your messaging. For any business, like, we could say one audience is freelancers and the other audience is people who are launching info products. And that business might serve both of those audiences. But for an outreach campaign, if you pick one specific audience first and use that to drive who you're emailing and what you're talking about, it's a lot easier for you to understand what call to action to have, what value to include, what type of people to be reaching out to. But if you smush those two audiences together, it could get a little messy where you're emailing two separate groups of people and you're trying to have the information be relevant to both. And you end up with an email that I think is less valuable overall than an email targeted to one specific audience.
And you want your email and all your communication to be crispy, as mm-hmm. Hemingway says. Mm-hmm. And you cannot be crispy without knowing the audience, at least.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm sure we've been on the receiving side of bad, ill-formed emails where it's like, dear person, I'd love to help with thing. And if the email is just like trying to reach as many people as possible, if it's just blasted out to the ether, well, it's not going to have as much of an impact as a carefully targeted email with a really well-researched audience. To throw some numbers behind this, for cold outreach campaigns, like I've worked on cold outreach campaigns for e-commerce stores where we're trying to work with bloggers to get them to review our product, typically a placement rate, getting a link or getting a review, you get between 5% and 8% placement. So you email 100 people, you get 5 product reviews. But by writing a really dialed in and perfect email that targets an audience specifically, on some campaigns I've gotten between a 25 and a 35% placement rate. So I sent out 100 emails and I had 25 people who were like, we're ready to write a review about your product. And I was like, oh my God, what's going on? This is crazy. But I share that because what I learned in that case was the more dialed in and targeted the audience, the email was for the audience, the more relevant we made it to that audience, the more personalized we made the emails, the better response rate we got, the more placements we got, and the more people we found that were willing to work with us. So it always starts with audience, and the more laser targeted you could be with an audience, not just fashion bloggers, but like 21 to 25 year old female fashion bloggers who are writing about club wear, you're able to write an email that really specifically, crisply targets them and provides value to them.
I think I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum, because whenever I'm doing outreach, I feel guilty even copying and pasting things into my email, you know.
Mm-hmm.
However, so I feel bad about not sending it completely personalized email. So any kind of attempt you do in that direction is going to be good anyways.
Absolutely. And I found a lot of success using like when I'm doing an outreach campaign for a client, I'll start by crafting a very valuable email, but just with like placeholders for like name of website, thing I'm pitching, and making sure it's a really well-written email, then personalizing it as I send it out with the person's name, their business name, their website, any reference links I want to include. So for a person receiving it, it's personalized to them, but I'm starting with a really well-formed template. Just like if we're doing a design project or a marketing project or writing a marketing plan, we might start with a skeleton or a scaffold and build on top of that so we don't have to start from square one or ground zero. It's the same way when writing an email. You write a very effective template, and then you personalize that template for the people you're reaching, and that gives you the best of both worlds. You're able to leverage that email, but you're also able to have it be specific to the people you're reaching out to.
Yeah, and writing copy for such a purpose is kind of the same as designing some kind of template, or let's say designing around some content. So you're designing with some sample content inside. Mm-hmm. However, whenever you take decisions, you're just thinking like, what's going to happen if that content is white, blank, black, empty, or, you know, a different kind of pattern or anything like that. So you keep all that in mind while designing around a single piece of content. So the same for email templates. Mm-hmm. You're writing to a single person, aiming for a single successful email. However, you're just making it flexible enough so that when the name or something becomes replaced, it's still valid.
100%. Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's a great way to frame it.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So you define the audience. You found a person who would like to email.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do you figure out their email address?
That's probably...
And the proper name, probably.
And the proper name. So let's say like we identify a business that we want to reach out to, or maybe business that has a podcast we want to reach out to. This could apply for both sales outreach or marketing outreach. So the first step is identifying the person we want to contact. And it's better to start high and get referred down than start low and try to get referred up. And what I mean by that is if we're doing outreach, we'll want to outreach to a decision maker, an executive, somebody who has power within the company, because while they might not be the person we need to talk to about this project, when we're referred down to the person, we suddenly have that added bonus of being referred to them by the CEO. So we send an outreach email to the CEO or the chief marketing officer of a company. They say, oh yeah, we need to talk about this. The person you actually need to talk to is Bob, who works in the marketing department. I'll send an email connecting the two of you. So now instead of reaching out directly to Bob, you just had the CEO say, Bob, talk with Kai about this project. And Bob's going to be like, okay, I better talk to Kai about this thing. Where if you email directly to Bob, Bob might be busy. Bob might ignore your email and you need to follow up a couple times. So I found a lot more success aiming high and getting referred down.
And I remember your killer phrase that works here is that icebreaker email, something like, are you the best person to talk about X?
Exactly. Yeah. If not, who do you recommend I get in touch with? And it's a super, super crispy email that does get referrals to the right person. Or if the person you're emailing is the right person already, it gives them a really quick and easy, yes, I'm the right person. How could I help you?
Great. Now we have the person. Mm-hmm. How do you figure out the address unless you have a direct referral?
Unless you have a direct referral, the question is how you find their email address. And that could either be incredibly easy or incredibly hard. On the incredibly easy side of the spectrum, you could look at the first steps I always do are look at the website and see, like, do they publish the email addresses on the site itself? So often they might have like a directory page or the about page where it lists like the president and the founder, and the email addresses aren't there. But poking around, you might be able to find a sitemap or a contact page or another page that does have the email addresses for the people you're trying to reach. So just exploring around the target website can help you easily find the specific person's email address. If you can't find the specific person's email address, what you might often be able to find is somebody else's email address. And the value there is it will tell you the format of the email address. So typically, a company might say, all of our email addresses are first name, first initial of your last name at companyname.com. So you find that Bob Dinosaur is the accounting person, and his email is bobd@companyname.com. And you're like, ah, okay, here's a thread I can follow up on. If the email is bobd@companyname.com and I'm trying to reach the CEO, okay, I'll try emailing CEO's first name and then the first initial of their last name @companyname.com. So by understanding how the email is formatted, you could grab the person's name and say, well, okay, does this permutation work to reach the person I'm trying to email? Another strategy I really like is the program Email Hunter. I believe it's emailhunter.io or emailhunter.co. It's a SaaS tool. It's free. They do have paid plans that lets you find email addresses in a couple seconds. And so you're able to just enter the domain name you're trying to search for emails for. And it will say, okay, we've crawled the web. These are all the emails we found that are at that domain. Sometimes you get lucky and the email address of the person you're trying to reach is listed there. Other times, emailhunter.co will just tell you, here's the format of the email address. Run with it and see if you could guess the right email address to email. So when you're trying to find that email address, sometimes you could get lucky and find the email address out in the wild. Other times, you're able to make an educated guess based on the format you're able to find for email addresses within the company. If both of those are strikeouts, both of those don't produce a result for you, one strategy that I've had limited success with is emailing like the contact email address or even just directly calling the company and saying, hey, I'm following up with the CEO, but I lost his email address. What's the best email address to send them an email at? It definitely takes a bit of guts to call up a company and say, hey, can I have this person's email address? But more often than not, the secretary or the person who answers the phone will say, oh yeah, of course, here's the email address for you.
I think saying that you lost it is bad karma.
It could be. It definitely is a bit gray hat, a bit of a white lie. But if you're trying to get in touch with them, sometimes it's what you need to do to find that email address. The problem with that approach is it doesn't necessarily scale. If you're doing an outreach campaign where you're trying to reach 1,000 people and you don't have their email addresses, you can't easily call 1,000 different companies and spend the time on the phone to get the email. So what I often do is try to guess what their email address is just based on that format. Take a look at LinkedIn and see, okay, I might not know who the person I'm trying to reach is, but I'll search for the company on LinkedIn and find, okay, the president is this person, the co-founder is this person, I've got their names. Now let me do a quick Google search and just like combine their name with the phrase email and see, can I find their email address there? So finding the email address can be difficult. It could be hidden, but there's a couple strategies that you could use to try to track it down.
In my Heroku experience, I'm way less automated than you. So I try whenever, I have personal feelings towards forums on the site because why would not they just post an email there?
Right.
However, when I know the person's Twitter handle, I could first use a tool called something All My Tweets. And it's a long, long web page. They put like all tweets of a person in a long page, and you can simple search for a text, let's say email, and you can quite often find like you can email me at something something.
Oh, that's
in
perfect.
The person's tweet history. So that's one hack, but it doesn't work like always, but sometimes it does. And the next step, if you don't find it there, you can just directly ping a person on Twitter with something like, can I email you for an interview, like for a book, and like details later, and then he will say yes. So it's not cold anymore. You're just directly following up, and he can give you an email in the personal message on Twitter, for example.
Yep, and you could also use a variant of that email we referenced earlier, the are you the best person to talk about this? Over Twitter, just sending, or even over LinkedIn, sending them a message on one of those platforms and saying, hey, are you the best person to talk to about, you know, scheduling an interview with you or XYZ? If not, who do you recommend I get in touch with? Over Twitter, they might say, hey, you want to get in touch with this person? Here's their handle. Here's their email address. Over LinkedIn, they might say, hey, here's the person you want to get in touch with. So yeah, Twitter can be a very valuable way to make contact with somebody in that public setting and say, what's the best way to get in touch with you? I need to send you an email about X.
And usually even the busiest people, they reply to direct tweets.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So once we get that email address, we write the subject line.
Yep.
What do we put there?
Subject lines can be, I mean, there's volumes of literature, dozens of ebooks written about what goes into a good subject line for email marketing or for cold outreach. I've found a lot of success with a very, very simple subject line where it's just my first name at company name. And it's not tricky. It's not hacky. It's not, I'm enticing them with these seven flavors of intrigue to get them to open the email. I'm just saying, hey, this is Kai from, you know, Kaiko or Kai from W Your Audience. And I found the benefit to that email there, that subject line is it clearly communicates like who I am and where I'm emailing from. And there's a million variations that might improve the open rate there, but I've just decided to focus on a simple subject line that makes it easy for the person receiving the email to know who I am, maybe what I'm emailing about, and what company I'm coming from.
This is super smart. Never thought about it. Mm-hmm. In my story, I've been experimenting with it a bit, and what I like to put in my subject lines for outreach is a good name for the thread for the person to refer to me when they look at it. Mm. Let's say when I'm asking people for an interview for the UI audit book, my subject line would be interview for a UI UX book, question mark, mm-hmm. which is short. It's to the point, so it's the essence of my email. And whenever we talk about it later, there is a thread in Gmail and they can just, you know, see a nice thread with a very nice headline, which kind of flatters them a bit because it's an interview for the book, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of titles your entire communication line further on.
Absolutely.
So I have been liking it this way. I'm not sure if it really a winning approach, but it can be another approach at least.
And I'm thinking about it, and I just arranged a dozen interviews for the book I'm writing, The Traffic Manual. And the email subject that I used for those outreach emails was, can I interview you, parentheses, 30 minutes, comma, Skype video plus audio, end parentheses, question mark. And so in that subject line, I was clearly communicating what my ask was. I want to interview you. I was telling them how long it's going to be, 30 minutes. I'm telling them what the format will be, Skype video plus audio. And so from the, before they even open the email, they're like, I know what's going to be inside of this box. He's asking me for an interview for 30 minutes and it's going to be over Skype. And so it makes it easy for them to be like, oh, okay, yeah, that's something I could do. So I guess a second alternative for subject lines for cold outreach like this is making a short version of your ask within that subject line and just making it really clear to the recipient. No tricks, no, trying to create an open loop in their mind. So they're like, oh, what is the secret to email marketing they want to ask me about? It's just like, can I interview you? Great. It's easy for them to understand what you're asking for. And flashing back to the last episode we recorded, the less uncertainty you leave in the mind of the person you're emailing or building a relationship with, the less risk they perceive there, and the easier it will be for them to work with you.
That's right. That's a good approach to take. Because writing this subject line and subject line for an email campaign in your mailing list, these are two different things.
Absolutely.
The other one can be like a link bait title for an article or something very curious so that people can wonder what's inside. But here you just want to strive for maximum clarity.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that there's a huge world of difference between the types of emails that you need to write for email outreach and the types of emails that you write for email marketing to your newsletter. When you're marketing to your newsletter, it's very focused on education and teaching them something new. When you're writing a cold outreach email, you don't have that existing relationship with them. So you need to be focused on, and we'll get to these other points in a second, a short email, clear calls to action, and clearly communicate to them what you're asking for and what the purpose of the email is. Since again, if you're emailing busy people, they're going to be looking for any excuse possible to delete the email, archive the email, ignore the email, process the email next week. I'm terrible about this. I probably have like a dozen different email threads where they had an ask for me. It was like, hey, can I interview for a thing? And there was just like no next step for me to take. And I've just boomeranged that email forward in time three or four times. And for busy people, you need to make sure that the email is easy for them to act on. And one great way to do that is a subject line that clearly communicates what they ask is going to be.
Right. So we nail the subject line. Now we write the body of the email.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start with the hard part. How? What do you say? Hey, hey, John. Hi, John. Good morning, John. Anything else?
I am a perpetual user and abuser of the salutation and greeting Heya, H-E-Y-A. Every single email I send always starts with Heya name. And partly it's because...
This is from Patrick McKenzie?
I think he uses
Heya.
I think he uses something similar to it. For me, it was just because like I used to use Howdy. I don't take business that seriously or as seriously as I should. And so I like my personality reflecting through in the emails. And so I don't think anybody's – if somebody is turned off by me saying like howdy or heya as the greeting in an email, they're not somebody I want to work with. They're not somebody who I want to interview. They're not somebody who I'm going to be able to build a relationship with. So really any type of greeting that just feels natural to you and will match up with your personality when they do interview with you or when they are engaged in an email thread with you makes more sense. I've been on the receiving end of cold emails where it's like a very well-written, well-formed email template that every salesperson in the company is using. But as soon as I start having a dialogue with the person, the messaging, the words they use, the way they phrase things completely changes. And I'm like, okay, that was a template. And now I'm getting to see who the real you is. In my case, because I'm doing outreach and then following up on the outreach, I like having that initial email, even in that salutation or greeting, be as authentic to who I am and how I like to communicate as possible. So when we do engage in that conversation, they're like, oh yeah, okay, this makes sense. This is how he talks, not an abrupt shift.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So I've been a fan of hey, mm-hmm. like H-E-Y. And, you know, I'm not a native speaker, and at school they never teach you anything like howdy or, you know, hiya or yeah. whatever. And my Australian friend Ian Dooley, he introduced me to the world of hey, and I was fascinated because I could never imagine people, you know, writing emails like that. Right. However, I like it a lot these days. And I address my newsletter campaigns as hi, mm-hmm. because I think this is more a little bit more serious than hey. Mm-hmm. However, well, both will work probably as soon as you use the person's name correctly.
Absolutely. And I think that's the important part. Like, it doesn't matter what you preface it with. You want to, wherever possible, include that person's name at the start of the email. Like, whenever you're able to say, hey, Jane, you're immediately building rapport with them. You're showing that you've done research. You're building that connection. People love seeing their names in print, seeing their names used in an email. It's so much better than like, dear podcast host, dear business owner. It turns people off from the get-go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we put together a subject line. Then the first line should probably be a few flattering words about the owner, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like how flattering that should be.
What I found is there, you don't want to be sycophantic. You don't want to be too flattering, but you want to reference something relevant to their business in its current state, to a recent event in their company or a recent episode of their podcast, something that just shows that you've done the minimum amount of research like, hey, Jane, I just listened to the last episode of the UI Breakfast podcast and I loved it. Great job interviewing Kai on there. Then you're able to move into what the main content of your email is. But that short 1 to 2 sentence introduction personalizes the email, makes it feel more authentic, makes it feel real to the person receiving it, and makes it feel less templatized or rigid or formulaic. That's the word I'm searching for. That said, I've had a lot of success on campaigns where I do completely kill that introduction and just move straight into the body of the email because I was pressed on time or I wasn't able to do the research to personalize the email to that extent. In some cases, what I found works if I'm targeting a very specific narrow audience is to have a general all-purpose flattery statement that just is tuned in for that audience. So before, when I've done email outreach campaigns to fashion bloggers, I didn't want to spend the time. I was lazy. I didn't want to spend the time and be like, oh, I have to find a review post they've written on these 100 fashion blogs I'm reaching out to. This is going to take forever. So instead, because I knew like I was targeting a very specific audience of women who had fashion blogs, who were writing for an audience of women 21 to 25 years old, I was like, hey, I really love your fashion blog. You're doing an excellent job of reflecting your personal style and showcasing great outfits and variations for women to wear. I love it.
Oh, Kai, so, this is so sneaky.
It's so, so sneaky. But it, because I think the audience was so dialed in, I was able to do something slightly sneaky like that where it felt like I was giving them a direct compliment, but I was using that exact same phrase with every person I emailed. And it worked on those outreach campaigns. This was one of the campaigns where I had that 25 to 30% placement rate. I don't credit it just to that phrase. I credit
to— You can just flatter ladies.
Flatter everyone. But if you don't have the time or don't have the capability to personalize every single email, what you can get away with is having a very narrow audience targeting for your email and having the email personalized to that audience, if not to the specific individual members of that audience.
However, my warning should be steer clear of phrases like, I've been following your blog for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'm an avid fan of all your work. Because if you're not, don't pretend to be.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Like, flatter the person. And like, even echoing on that, a phrase like, I'm a huge fan of your work, that's an I-focused statement and not a you-focused statement. If we flip that around to, you're producing great work where you're writing great articles, it doesn't make it feel like you're needlessly glomming on, and it also praises the person you're emailing. So instead of making it an I statement, I love your work, it's a you statement. You write great articles, you do great design, you're producing a great podcast, and that's going to build that rapport and make it feel like, oh, they listen to my thing, they care about the things I'm producing.
Plus, one more piece of advice, be a little bit more specific than just, you know, great work or something. It's mm-hmm. always great to give more context, even if it's generalistic. Like your example with the fashion audience is just perfect. It's mm-hmm. not tailored to a specific person. However, it is a very, you know, intelligent notion that, you know, you feature ladies and like this and that is much better than like, your fashion is good. I like your taste. I like your style.
You have great personal style.
Yes. Something like that would be not flattering. But, you know, people like intricate things, more specific things.
They do.
If you do proper research, please indicate that, you know, giving context to the latest work is just the easiest, super easy and nice way to give it.
Absolutely. I've had the best results on outreach campaigns where I'm able to reference like a specific recent article they've written or a specific mm-hmm. podcast episode. The more specific you're able to make it, being able to say like, hey, Jane, I love your site. Your recent post on X was so wonderful. And the latest episode of UI Breakfast was great. I really enjoyed learning about topic. Whoa, that's super personalized. And whoever opens that email is going to be like, this person loves my stuff. This person loves what I'm creating. I'm excited to continue reading this email. So the more personalization you could do, the better. But if you could get by with personalization at the audience level, the email will still work. It won't negatively impact you too much. The more personalization you add, the better your email will do. So it's more like an additive effect.
Yep. One more trick you can use here. If you're an expert judging, let's say, copywriting, or I'm judging design, I have authority, I can give my opinion on design. So I could say that, you know, from a standpoint of UI, UX, you are doing a great job at your app, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to make sure it's really not ugly beforehand. So it's got to be, you know, based on real facts. However, whatever judgment you can make, you can just put it there. So my favorite it's not the first line, it's my favorite response line to any kind of person who's addressing me is that your site looks good mm-hmm. whenever it really looks good. And most people's sites are, you know, looking decent. So why not mention that as an opening?
Absolutely. And I think specific flattery can work, especially even if you don't have an ask. Like, I've reached out to people before who are influencers or authorities in a space I'm trying to break into just by saying like, hey, you know what? I was looking at your site and you have really, really great SEO. Like, I don't have anything more to say than that. I just wanted to tell you from one SEO consultant to obviously somebody who knows their stuff, you're doing everything right. Kai. And more often than not, those emails have gotten a, hey, thank you, because people like being praised. People like somebody noticing that they're doing something well. So that could be a great way to jumpstart a conversation. Even if you don't have like a call to action or an ask to make, suddenly you're on that person's radar. Suddenly you've built you're starting to build a relationship with them. And it comes from a place of being authentic and saying, you're doing this really well. I enjoy what you're doing.
I have a rule of thumb. Whenever, let's say I'm starting to use a new SaaS and there is like a letter from the founder who is addressing an old responder to their clients newly arrived, I have a rule of thumb to always say hi in reply, because I know this can really make the founder's day.
Absolutely.
It costs me 15 seconds of my time. So I will just say, hi, nice, you know, nice SaaS. Thank you for doing a great job there. Good luck, you know. And I cannot link it to like any precise direct opportunities, but it's so good just to build yourself good mood for the morning or something like that.
It makes somebody else's day.
Yeah, it can easily, because they're just, you know, they're running a SaaS as a hard business. Yeah. They have a very hard day. They start with support. Why not, you know, make it shine with just one friendly letter?
100%. And like I have an autoresponder sequence set up for people that sign up for my email list. And the first one is like a welcome email. Hey, this is what I'm going to be writing about. And like, hit reply and tell me a bit about you. And maybe 20% of people that sign up actually hit reply. But I effing love those emails, because somebody's like, hey, this is awesome. This is a little about me. And then we can start a conversation. And like, I respond back and they're like, oh my God, I never expected somebody to respond back. And it humanizes both parties and lets you have an interesting conversation. So I'm 100% on board with responding to those automated onboarding emails. It'll make somebody's day and foster communication.
And, you know, it all goes back to actually being a good person online. Like, whatever, it's such a faceless environment. So if there are such easy ways of making people's days better, go ahead and use it. Make yourself good karma.
100%. 100%.
Right. So we figure out the way to perfectly flatter a person with a context. And now it's time to introduce yourself.
Absolutely. And I'd say one thing we haven't touched on that I want to bring up is the length of these initial emails. So
good, good. So?
So I shoot for between 200 and 400 words in these initial outreach emails for a couple reasons. The first is the person I'm emailing is probably busy, so they don't have time to read a 6-paragraph email that wanders and meanders its way through. I want to make it short. The second reason is they're probably reading it on their phone. And if you think about it, you pull out your phone, like I have a gigantic iPhone 6S Plus. So it's as big as a 27-inch monitor.
It's like,
it's gigantic. But even on a phone like that, like if I get an email that's a couple paragraphs long, I'm scrolling down. What do they want? But if it's a short email where it's like, hey, here's a thing, here's a call to action, here's a signature, it's easy for me to be like, yes, I want to do this, and quickly respond back, yeah, sure, let's do it. So I'd say it's very important to optimize for a 200 to 400 word long email. Otherwise, people will read a couple paragraphs. And if you don't have that initial relationship with them, they'll say, why did this person write me an essay archive? And you've lost them.
Yeah, that makes me also uncomfortable, because whenever someone reaches out to me with 6 paragraphs of text, whenever I commit myself to replying to them, I need to make sure I read thoroughly through these 6 paragraphs and not make myself a fool by not noticing a single detail. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to make that process uncomfortable for the person you're reaching out to.
Mm-hmm. A friend of mine, sort of flipping it around to the perspective of the busy person receiving the email, a friend of mine taught me this hack. So, and I've adopted it too. When I receive an email that's like, multiple paragraphs long, I don't know who the person is, it's their first email to me, and they have like 6 questions in there, I just respond to the first question. I'm like, everything beyond the first question no longer exists. You got a response to the first question.
Curious.
And so
requires some brevity.
Yeah, it I think teaches them that I'm going to respond to one question in the email, and it helps them build that good habit of, okay, so I want to write a short email and just have one question. And if they're like, you didn't answer my other 5 questions, I'll be like, you could email me one question at a time. Because that's the only way they're going to get a response. If I have to write like an essay in response to their essay to me, I mean, I love writing emails to people, but I only have so much time in the day. So the short email with a single call to action just makes it so much easier for me as the email recipient to say, okay, I'm ready to respond to this. I know what I need to do.
Yeah, I think we're jumping to call to actions. I have a lot to say there too. However, now we should talk about introducing yourself.
Absolutely.
Shortly. How do you do that? How do you pitch yourself?
I pitch myself based on value to the person I'm emailing. So I try to frame it as, if I have to talk about my experience or my worth to their organization, let's say I'm pitching them as a consultant or pitching them as a guest on their podcast, I want to frame the value. I want to frame my value in terms of how it's valuable to them, not say, I'm an outreach consultant, I'm great at X, but hey, if you're experiencing this problem, my knowledge can help you solve that problem. So with my introduction, I'm always trying to frame it in terms of why is this relevant to them, not why is it relevant to me. And one trick I use here that I'll come back to multiple times in this episode is using you-focused language instead of I-focused language. So you-focused language just uses the word you to address the person. Like, hey, Jane, if you're struggling with outreach, you know, here's an idea. I'm an outreach consultant who could help you improve your outreach process versus an email that's entirely I-focused and says, I'm an outreach consultant. I'm great at doing outreach. I'm great at helping people do this. I-focused emails get complicated for the person receiving it because they're suddenly reading I phrases in their mental voice. And well, it's not me actually saying this, it's the other person. And you get a little bit of cognitive dissonance there. But if you send a you focused email, the person reading that content in that copy is reading it in their mental voice and putting it into their perspective. So I think you focused language in that introduction is a great way to frame the value you're able to provide while making it focused on the person receiving the email.
And, you know, you focus language, it's the same for anything you put out online. Articles, sales copy, whatever. You know, I focus language is not going to take you anywhere, ever. Even in life, not even online, but in life or whatever, but online especially.
Absolutely. My friend Kurt Elster has this phrase he says where you want your copy to be a mirror you hold up to the recipient or the reader. So it's reflecting back to them the attributes or the problems or the pains that they are experiencing. So whenever I write you focus copy, I always think about it like that. I want it to be copy that's describing their current situation and what they need. Even in an introduction email like this, I want to frame my value in terms of how it's valuable to them.
Right. That's even in the introduction. And then we need to mention what we actually want from them. But it should be so directly linked to what they get out of it.
Absolutely. And so when it comes to that actual core of the email, I think you want to, just like you said, you want to frame it in terms of what they get out of it or what their involvement in this is. So I recently did a small outreach campaign to some colleagues to interview them for the book I'm writing, The Traffic Manual. And in that outreach email, I started off saying like, hey, I want to interview you. And then I moved on to a paragraph that said, why do I want to interview you? Because you're an expert on this topic and I want to feature you as an expert interview in this book, The Traffic Manual. Then I moved into the core ask, which was, hey, it would be a 30-minute video or audio interview over Skype. If this sounds good to you, just respond back with a quick, sounds good, and I'll send you some more information and we'll work out the scheduling. So I framed everything in terms of them, the value to them, even though it was a very I-focused ask. I need to interview you. I want to interview you. I wanted to frame it in terms of you're the expert and authority on, you know, writing a landing page that works or writing a cold email that works. So I'm praising and flattering them. Then moving into that core part of my message, which is I want to do an interview with you. This is what the interview would look like. Then moving into that call to action of, if this sounds good, just respond back with a thumbs up or a yes, I'd love to, and we'll move forward from there. How about you when it comes to writing that core section of an email?
I just sent a very similar campaign out. Well, I'm already done with the interviews, so it was everybody reached back. I just had one person who was not comfortable, you know, putting their content behind the paywall. Other than that, you know, 100% success, but it was semi-warm, I must admit. So the you know, the body of the email was very, very similar. So it was something like, would you like to do a 30, 40 minute audio interview for this book? So see, it's one sentence. It's you focused. Mm-hmm. It describes the format. It describes the length, their involvement. And then I have a sentence something like, our audience of SaaS founders would appreciate your success story in regard of UI UX design, let's say.
That's wonderful.
And we could talk about how you did this and this and this. And if you're, that sounds good, I will send you a scheduling link. Mm-hmm. So this is it. And Calendly makes it easy to schedule, but I don't want to be too pushy and to exclude the scheduling link right away because mm-hmm. I still want to make that interaction from them more evident. So, you know, there's a feeling of communication, not just, you know, myself pushing my content over them. So
100%. And I think that I can't remember who introduced me to this concept, but I always think of it as a chain of yeses. You'll be more successful with an ask if you start with a small ask and get them to say yes to it, move up to a medium-sized ask, and then a large ask. So in the emails that we both sent out for these interviews, we started off with a very small ask. It's like, if interviewing you sounds good, just respond back with a yes. So really small ask. The only action they need to take is respond back with a yes. In that second email, it's a slightly larger ask. Okay, great. Pick the time that works best for you on the calendar here. So if we had led off with that medium-sized ask, it's a larger step for them to take. They haven't committed themselves. But by starting off with that small ask, by the time we get to the point of sending them that scheduling link, they've already mentally locked themselves into giving this interview. They've convinced themselves it's something they want to do. They've said yes to it. So they're psychologically primed for it. And that makes it more likely for them to follow through with scheduling a time to be on the interview. So I think starting with a small ask, like just respond back with a yes, if this sounds good to you, we'll figure out the details later, is a wonderful way to approach a call to action and make it easy for somebody to be like, oh, all I have to do is type in yes, reply, yes, send, done.
Yeah. And they just say, you know, we'd love to do this. Send me the link. Mm-hmm. That's all they have to write down. That's so much easier than, you know, figuring out like when, like what, like.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And you touched on the tool Calendly. I love, I'm in deep love with Calendly. I want to run away with Calendly on a exotic elopement.
Yeah, I'm yet to interview Calendly's founder, Tope Awotona. Uh-huh. I'm interviewing him in the beginning of November, and I can't wait until I get my hands off on him and, you know, ask him all the questions, because this is an amazing tool he made. Mm-hmm.
So for the...
What does it do? Tell us.
I was about to ask you the same question. Calendly makes it super easy to schedule time. It makes it super easy for other people to schedule time on your calendar. So with Calendly, you're able to say, hey, you're able to connect it to your Google Calendar and say, okay, I'll create an event type like interview or 30-minute meeting, and I'm available for those events at this time range. And so Calendly is smart and says, okay, great. You said you're free between 10 and 3 on Tuesdays. I'm going to look at your calendar. Oh, it looks like you have a doctor's appointment scheduled from 1 to 3 on that Tuesday. We'll block out that time. But any other time that you have open that matches up to your availability, somebody can just go into your Calendly link and say, okay, great. I need to schedule a 30-minute meeting. This time is available. I'll click. I'll confirm, I'll enter my email address, and the meeting is booked. So it really simplifies the process of having somebody schedule time with you and avoids what I always think of the plague of the back and forth emails of like, are you available at this time? No, how about this time? Well, no, how about this time?
I did that plus, you know, I'm in different time zone. Mm-hmm. So in addition to that, I had like a huge arithmetics going in my mind, like what like what the hell is a match, you know? Mm-hmm. And now it's just such a no-brainer to make an appointment. Mm-hmm. I love it. I love it with all my heart.
And I think like our love of Calendly connects back to that topic I talked about on the last episode and earlier on this episode. Anything we could do to reduce the amount of uncertainty the person we're contacting has about our ask or the interview we're proposing makes it easier for them to say yes. So if we contact them and say, what time works for you? Suddenly the busy person we're emailing has to look at their calendar, has to say, oh, I'll propose 3 times, email the times to you. You say no, and the interview doesn't go anywhere. But if you say, okay, great. I want to make it really easy for you to pick a time. Here's a link. Pick whatever time works best for you. And will be booked. Now all they have to do is look at your available times and say, okay, great. I'm available at 3 p.m. on Tuesday. Confirm. everything's booked. So by reducing that uncertainty, you reduce the risk. By reducing the risk, you make it more likely for the interview or for your ask to happen.
So one more thing we need to mention here about CTAs in the emails is the necessity to have that very CTA.
Mm-hmm.
Like for that's valid not only for outreach emails, but for any email you send in your life, be it a personal email, client email, or whatever. You want that person to be able to take the next step, and you want to make it as solid as possible. And, you know, a few weeks ago, my husband gave me he wrote a very aggravating email to one of their company clients. And he thought his email was work art because it was like an artistic way to let the person down without him knowing it and, you know, establishing like the distance and whatever. It was very complicated political matter. Mm-hmm. However, it was a perfectly crafted email, but it did not have a call to action.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you got to have a call to action here. Like, you know, it can be as easy as saying, you know, if you would like to keep working on the same terms, let us know. If you don't let us know, we will assume that you don't want to work with us and we will, you know, terminate the contract or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's as easy. So you give the person a very easy yes action and you will give him an assumption what's going to happen if he says no or if he doesn't do anything. That's valid as well.
100% in agreement. And I think it's important to have that one core call to action. And that, well, unless I hear from you, this is what's going to happen as the alternative. I use that same framing in my emails where I'll have one call to action where it's like, for X to happen, respond back with a quick yes or thumbs up. And half the time I get back a thumbs up emoji. And I'll say, and if I don't hear back from you, we'll do this other thing instead. And so that lets them know that, okay, great. Like to make this happen, I have to take this action. Just responding back, yes, something quick and simple. And if I don't hear back from you, I, the person writing the email, am going to do this instead.
Yeah, for email communication, you need to strive for perfect clarity once again, because, you know, clarifying something in an email can be as long as 2 days in turnaround time for both parties.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to be as precise with all the details as possible so that, you know, the next steps are very clear and actionable and you're going to be saving your own time and the time of that person too.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And one more thing I know about email communication is that you've got to keep the positive language going on.
Mm-hmm.
Because there we cannot see the face. We cannot have any context, like nothing verbal, no gestures. So there is nothing else but your language. So you've got to add positive connotation to your phrases all the time.
Yep.
There should be no second guessing whether your email is friendly or not. It should be deadly obvious that your email is friendly. It can be as easy as putting like awesome, amazing, or something like great in the beginning of the response, but the whole block of text will have the emotional positive impact.
Absolutely. Yeah. When it comes to how we communicate, there's three main factors that people pick up on: tone of voice, body language, and the actual words we use. And mm-hmm. when we're emailing with people, well, we lose out on tone of voice, we lose out on body language, and all we're left with is words. And when you're just reading the words, it's, and I know from personal experience, it's so easy to read this email and be like, they hate me. They said this thing. They must hate me. And I talk to them and they're like, we're so excited to work together. And I'm like, I thought you hated me because your email said this. And yeah, you're absolutely right. Like you want to use the correct phrasing and use the correct language to communicate the right emotional intent in your email. Otherwise, what you think is like a short, quick reply that just says like, yeah, let's do it. The person receiving it might respond and be like, oh, they are very angry about this and don't want to do it. So there's a lot of subtlety to the best way to do this type of email communication and make sure the person receiving your email understands the correct emotion that you're sending the email in.
Also, one more thing is the art of finishing off the email thread with something short, and you know that you eliminate the need of that person to say like, okay, cool, thumbs up.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need to say that. You just, you know, kind of wrap up the communication smartly so that they can save themselves a few minute reply.
Absolutely. I am a huge fan of including the phrase no reply needed.
Mm-hmm.
And just having that at the end of the email thread and just being like, okay, great. I've got what I needed. No reply needed to this message. I'll move forward. And that lets them know exactly that, I'm ready to move forward, that I have the information I need, that they don't need to take any other action. They could archive the email, and it eliminates the pointless thank you emails. Like, I remember working in a corporate office. So often I send an email, they respond back, I'd respond back, and they'd be like, thanks. And I'm like, why did we just send a one word email?
No worries.
And so, I think being assertive about saying, hey, you know what? No response is needed, or FYI, end of message, no response needed, can be a great way to pass along information in these short emails without requiring an extensive thread. I also like using it. We touched on it just before, the unless otherwise directed strategy. So what I do is, in an email, if I'm emailing with a client or a prospect or somebody I want to build a relationship with, I might use the phrase, unless otherwise directed, or unless I hear back from you, I'm going to do X. And so it sets that paper trail in motion that says, well, this is what I'm asking for, and unless I hear back from you, I'm going to do this thing. So you're able to reference back to that email once you've sent it and say, okay, great. Like, I had emailed you on this date. I said this thing. I said, unless I hear back from you, I'm going to do this. I never heard back from you, so I did that thing.
You probably want to add a notion of time frame there too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Time boxing it to, like, unless I hear back from you in the next 3 days, I'll do this, makes it much more approachable and easy for them.
Yeah, so I actually love that no response needed, because I don't use it, and I can just find so many uses for it in my real life now. Mm-hmm. I've been just kind of dubbing it in with my own language, but this is just, you know, it's so straightforward.
Absolutely, yeah. And it clearly communicates to them that no response is needed. They could hit archive, close the thread, and be done with it. And when you're ready for them to give a response, you're able to follow up to that thread and just be like, hey, I have a question X. Let's answer it now.
Mm-hmm. So in the last few months, I've adopted very, very concise email style. Mm-hmm. So I do really like a couple lines emails quite often, but I need to, I always make sure that it's positive. So it starts with a few positive words. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's been perfectly fine. Saving time for both you and your respondent. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So we've touched much on the CTA. Mm-hmm. And so it can be active. It should give like a passive clause. If there's nothing if nothing happens, then something's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And you can also include no response needed, which is my new favorite. Why would you use a PS, postscriptum?
I find that postscripts are valuable in cold email outreach to provide some justification or some additional social proof that doesn't fit into the main email itself. So often when I'm emailing, let's say I'm emailing a podcast and pitching myself or a client as a guest, I'll include a PS that says, PS, after the email, after the call to action, after the signature, PS, by the way, I was just interviewed on UI Breakfast about email outreach. If you want to check out the episode, here's a link. So by including that postscript, I'm able to include a little bit of, not market data, but a little bit of social proof and a little bit of validation that I'm out there and I'm doing these things, and have it be an I-focused addition to the email, but have the core of the email be very you-focused for the reader. So even if they don't click through and listen to that episode or click through and read the blog post I'm including there, just having that as a one or two line throwaway at the bottom of the email provides that boost in credibility. Oh, I was just interviewed on Entrepreneur on Fire. Here's a link to the episode if you want to check it out. So it's able to say, oh, he was just on this thing. He talked about this thing. It must be, it adds relevancy to the email and adds credibility to you as the person sending the email. So I like postscripts in that type of outreach. In the fashion outreach campaign we've referenced a couple times on this episode, I'd include a PS to another product review we had done. So by the way, we just worked on a review with fashion blogger XYZ. Here's a link to the review if you want to check it out. So when I was pitching new fashion bloggers on working with us, I was able to show credibility in the fact that we'd done a campaign before with another blogger. Here's a link to what it turned out to be. Here's what they said. And altogether, it just was a quick way to add that social proof and add additional credibility to my outreach.
Yeah. From a design standpoint, I can say that a postscript adds visual interest to the email, as sleazy as it sounds. And, you know, there are quite a few explorations when studies have shown that people read postscripts more than the body of things.
Absolutely.
it's especially valid for like long form sales pages and stuff. So they just scroll down to the bottom and read what's there. Yep. So it might be valid.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, I go back and forth on whether I want the postscript in one of these outreach emails to be focused on repeating the call to action or providing additional social proof. I've personally settled on having them provide that social proof, but I think there's a very great argument that could be made on using those postscripts to repeat the call to action. But again, if we're just focusing on a short 200 to 400 word email, it's going to be easy for them to be like, here is the call to action. Why is the call to action repeated one line down from where they just had it there? So
it's long form by any
exactly
means.
Super super short form. Yeah
And by the way, so we are talking about a call to action, but you should really free your party of doing anything else. You do not need to make them do research. Like, you can link to a book you're mm-hmm. interviewing them for, but you should not imply that they have to read it.
Yep.
So you don't really make any request of their time rather than, you know, just answering yes to your email.
Absolutely. Yeah. You want to make it as easy for them to scan the, I mean, again, imagine that the person you're emailing, it's 7 p.m. on a Friday night. They've already had two drinks. They're about to get into a cab. Your email just came into the phone, and you want them to be able to scan the email while they're slightly tipsy in 30 seconds and know whether they want to respond yes or no. Like, that's the mental model of the person I always imagine I'm writing these emails to. They're rushed, they're busy, they're distracted. I want to make sure that they could scan the email and know, oh, this is something I want to do, I'll respond yes right now. Or this is not something I want to do, I'll respond no right now. So just eliminating that uncertainty in their mind and making it very easy for them to say, yes, let's do this.
I receive quite a few emails, and I love getting them from people who are experiencing like problems with their design, and they expect me to have a glance at their work, or maybe if I want to reply, I really need to have a context of what they did. Mm-hmm. However, the CTA there, I mean, my source of knowledge is something like, now you can search Android store, like Google store, for this and this name. Well, there is no way I'm going to search
right.
App Store for my, you know, for the hostile platform.
Yep.
For the search of their UI. Much better if they included a few screenshots. That would be just so much easier for me. And they would, you know, increase their chances of me getting back to them with some opinion.
Absolutely. And again, if they start off with that small ask of like, hey, Jane, you're an expert on UI. I'd love it if I could send you two screenshots for my app and get your professional feedback on whether I'm doing X correctly. Okay, great. Like, they've given a very specific call to action. They've told you exactly what to expect. You're able to say, yeah, I'd love to offer that feedback. Now they're able to respond back and be like, wonderful. Here's screenshot one. Here's screenshot two. Here's the specific question I have. I'd love to know your thoughts, short or long. And now you're in a position where you're like, okay, great. Like, the screenshots are in front of me. I could spend 5 minutes, write out my feedback to them, send them the email. The person sending that email has gotten exactly what they wanted, but they've just made it so you as the recipient have to do no additional work to provide the value that they're asking for.
I just listened to a podcast by Hiten Shah and Steliati, mm-hmm. which I highly recommend. I need to put it in show notes. And I forgot who said it, but, you know, I think it was Hiten. Whenever you are asked a question, you don't have to immediately answer it. Like, you don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Hiten's manner of replying to email would be, you know, tell me more about this. Like, answer one more question to me. And this is a huge filter. You know, half of the people who emailed you are not going to take this further step because, you know, natural conversion rate applies, mm-hmm. which means that, you know, you are not as important to them as it seems in first place. So you might just save yourself like a couple minutes and not respond to it in full.
Absolutely. I do something very similar when people email me. I always think of it as the speed bump approach, where I just want to have like a small speed bump in front of them where I'm asking them mm-hmm. one question or to take one action. And if they do that, great. I'm ready to work with them. If they aren't willing to do that thing, they probably aren't going to value my advice or my input. They aren't going to get the value out of the ask that they're making to me. So just by putting that small thing, like in your example, asking them that one question, or I've said like, okay, great. Like, before you do that, can you just like put together a one-page briefing for me explaining this? And In some cases, they'll do it. And like, it'll make it so much easier for me to give them the value they're looking for. In other cases, they won't do it. And the conversation just ends there. But putting that small speed bump in place can be invaluable in protecting your time and also qualifying the person who's reaching out to you.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, I was listening to Hidden's podcast because I wanted to interview Stella Yefti.
Ooh.
Which I never got to, but I think I should now, now that I master all the outreach techniques from you.
He is the king of following up. And that was the next item on our agenda, following up and why follow-up matters.
Yeah. So why follow-up matters?
I think follow-up is important because, well, there's two scenarios where you'd follow up with somebody. You'd follow up with somebody when you get a no, or you get a soft no from them. And a soft no is them being like, I'm not sure if I'd be a good fit for this. It's not like a direct, no, I'm not a good fit. It's a maybe kind of no. Or you get no response from them. In either one of those scenarios, by following up and just sending, I think of it as persistently, politely following up with them, sending a follow-up email to keep that conversation going or move it forward or defeat their objection, you make it more likely that they'll say yes and end up taking the action you're asking them to take. Where if you assume that because they didn't respond to me or because they gave a soft no, they're not a good fit, you're prematurely making the assumption that they're giving a hard no. Better to follow up, better to defeat that objection, better to give them another opportunity to say yes. You aren't really risking anything there as long as you're being polite. All you're doing is saying, well, hey, it's a beautiful Saturday. Just wanted to follow up and see if you're interested in working together on this interview or being a guest on my podcast. And it just gives them an opportunity to say yes, where they might not have responded because they're busy or their dog was sick or they were out on vacation. By following up again, you make it more likely that they'll respond and engage with you.
Right. In the previous episode, we talked about follow-up on podcast outreach. And Kai, you mentioned that you have follow-up steps planned as far as 5 emails into a person who has never responded to you.
Yep.
Which is, you know, sending a second email is so uncomfortable for me. I mentioned mm-hmm. that. But 5 is just beyond any reasonable amount. However, it just might be, you know, 5 emails between you and success right there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I just booked a large guest for one of my clients' podcast, and I emailed that guest 7 times over 3 weeks because I knew he was traveling. I knew he was busy. I knew it would take effort to get on his calendar, but
was it Tim Ferriss?
Yeah, it was not Tim Ferriss. but every 4 days, I just email and be like, hey, just following up. We'd love to have you on the podcast. Here's a link to schedule a time to come on the podcast. And, just by persistently following up like that, by the time I got to that final email, they were like, hey, great. Sorry, it took me so long. I booked a time. And wonderful. Had I given up after that first email or that second email and just assumed that they didn't want to come on, I'd have lost out on having them on as a guest for my client's podcast. But by persistently following up until I either got a very firm no saying, I don't have the time to do this right. I'm sorry, but I can't contribute. Or a yes, I just have been giving up too early. So I'm a huge fan of persistently following up like that.
This is where outreach meets sales, actually.
It really does. And a lot of the best practices I advocate as outreach really come from me studying and reading about sales and what works in terms of sales outreach. That if you persistently follow up, if you write short emails, if you have a clear call to action, your prospect is more likely to respond yes and engage with you and potentially become a client. So same idea when you're doing outreach, write short emails, have a clear call to action, follow up when necessary, and the person you're emailing is likely to take the action you're asking them to take for you or likely to respond back, and you could build a relationship with them.
Absolutely. So finishing up today's podcast, I'd like to say that the perfect email should be short, should be personal, preferably, mm-hmm. should have a clear, identifiable call to action, just a single one.
Yep.
And you definitely need to follow up to achieve what you have been looking for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. If you aren't following up, it's like assuming that silence is a no, when silence is really
a silence.
Yeah, it's nothing. So follow up until you get that yes, or follow up until you get that hard authoritative no that says, I don't have the time to do this well. And you know, at that point, okay, great. I'll back off and focus on other people.
Right. Thank you, Kai, for the invaluable insight. I think everybody by closing today's episode should be just a master of writing emails, you know, and email king. Well,
hey, I'm so happy to share this knowledge with people. I hope it's helped the audience understand how to write an effective email. And hey, feel free to send me an email and I'll love to see how you reach out to me.
You know, this is supposed to be the last episode we do in this season. And, you know, I feel like tears are filling up my eyes now. Should we do two more?
Kai? I'm always down for them. If we want to, I'm down.
Well, I think we need to figure out a few more topics to talk about because Kai is just such a treasure chest of advice for all of us. Poor souls. Poor miserable souls who cannot follow up with one email. Yeah. Thank you, Kai, for sharing. Hey, see you in the next episode.
Thank you so much for having me on.